Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
We're all like guns, and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 168. I'm one of your hosts, Mike, and tonight with me, I have Thomas.
Hey, Mike.
And Benny.
Hey, guys.
How's it going?
Good.
All right, Thomas, why don't you get us started on what we did this week in Guns?
Not a lot, since it's only been 4 days since we recorded last time. All I really did is that I decided I'm not putting optics on the red dots on the BL-22. I took the Hawk 2x7 off my 44 Magnum, and I put it on the BL-22, and it's with the... I've got group receiver rings. It was low enough, so I decided on that. So I just took all the screws out, cleaned them all out, put Loctite on them, did the old level thing, mounted it. And so now I've got a nice little scope on the BL-22. So I was going to go to the range last night. And I'm close to Lake Ontario, and my range is up near the snow belt. So before I went, figured, okay, I'm going to go up to Canadian Tire and get some ammo. And once I left the subdivision, it was a blizzard going across all the fields. And I'd have to, it's all farmlands all the way up to the range. I figured, no, I'm not driving through that. So I did go buy the ammunition and I came home. That was it. That's all I've done in Guns this week. What about you, Benny?
Me, what did I do this week in Guns? Well, I finished my test loads for Tavor. I don't know if the listeners remember, like, 6 months ago, or maybe 4 months ago, I started reloading, like, because when I bought my reloading components, I bought a whole bunch of different companies and types of bullets and everything. So I finally got to the Hornady VMAX 55 grain stuff, and I looked at these bullets and I'm like, wow, they look pretty nice. I think I should invest the time and effort into seeing what load works the best. So I loaded up 10 different bullets, with the weight of ranging from 23 grains to 25 grains. So that went in 0.5 grain increments. So I finished that yesterday finally. I had the 24.5s I had to finish, and the 25s, I had 5 left of the 25 greens that I had to finish. And then I decided, okay, I finished the test loads. There's no point in finishing up the rest of the VMAX. So I might as well start reloading something else. So I pull out my other bullets, projectiles, and I have Hornady soft points, 55 grain, and then I have Armor Score 62 grain, full metal jacket bow tails. And I'm like, the bow tails, I don't even know if I should shoot those through the door, because they seem like the kind of thing you'd put through more of a precision rig. And, well, the Tavor isn't really a precision rig right now. So I decided I'm going to stick with my spear, 55 TNT bullets. And so I'm like looking at the load data, and I think I looked at spear first, and I'm like, why does it say the load data is for... I couldn't find the load data, so I'm like, oh, I better look at, Hodgins. That's where I was getting my other load data. I pull up Hodgins, and I'm looking at the load data, and I'm like, why the heck did I load the VMAX at up to 25 grains when, according to the load data, it shouldn't go past 22? And then I realized, oh, wait, I was on the mobile app, and I had to scroll sideways. I basically have to figure out again which projectiles they're actually the load data is for, because they have two pieces of load data for that range from like 22 grains to 24 at the most, and then they have one that's 23 to 25. So I for some reason I decided to do the 23 to 25, but with these spear bullets, which don't look that much different than the VMAX, I'm a little concerned about what I should actually be loading them to. So I loaded one bullet, and I might have to pull it and figure out what to do.
Now, the VMAX, those are the ballistic tip ones?
Yeah. So just looking at them, it looks like there's more of a shelf. I think it's called the ogive. The angle from the tip to the where it starts to taper is steeper on the VMAX. The spear is a lot more gradual. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. I'll have to do more research on that before I decide to blow up something.
Yeah, nobody wants to blow up a $2,500 gun.
No.
How many people want to blow up a $5 gun?
Well, unless it's a high point.
There are plenty of videos on the internet with that, Mike.
Yeah, there's also plenty of videos of people who go out and buy the latest PlayStation and then throw it on the ground in front of all the people in the lineup just to watch them cringe and cry.
Really?
Doesn't necessarily make it a good use of money.
No, it's not. Yeah, so there's that.
There's also a lot of videos of people on YouTube eating Tide Pods. Doesn't necessarily make it a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I gotta write it, search and find out where that came from. I've just been seeing a lot of that recently. I don't know the story behind it. What else did I do this week? I watched a really cool video today, actually, from the Gun Collective. They're discussing new big bore ARs that are coming out. So,
oh, I saw that.
Yeah, you saw that. Yeah. So I was gonna ask Mike if you watch those videos, because they ranged, let's say the most expensive AR was $48. That's $4,800. And then that was like a new company. I think it was Phoenix.
Okay.
And unless I'm getting the name, I'm probably mixing up the names. Then there was the Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat normally make 1911s, for our listeners who don't know, custom 1911s. They're coming out with one in a unique caliber. I think they're the first to use that caliber. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But theirs is priced at $2,900, I believe, for the cheaper model. And the more expensive model is $3,000. And then I forget the name of the company, Thomas, and maybe you remember it. Apparently, they're known for their big bore lever action guns.
Oh, it was the 4570.
Theirs is chambered in 500 Smith & Wesson, but auto. So they've reduced the rim a little bit, so it fits in an auto gun.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And they actually, like, if you watch the video, Mike, you'll see them shoot as the promo, you'll see some guy shooting this AR and it's just whopping his shoulder ridiculously. So yeah, it's a 500 Smith & Wesson in a semi-auto AR. It looked really cool, and that one was only going for $2,000, so not much more than my Tavor.
Only
$2,000. So if they bring them in on the same price point that they bring them in, that they sell them for in the States, that would be pretty awesome.
$2,600-$2,700.
Yeah, something like that.
That's a lot of money for an AR that is essentially going to be a range toy that you're going to pull out once a year.
Well, with the whopping that thing is going to give your shoulder, it's probably going to stay a range toy.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing you bring to the range and you pass your body, you're like, here, try this. You know? and then you go and you smirk 20 feet away while he bruises his shoulder.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it looked really cool, and it hopefully someone will make some proprietary mags for 500 Smith & Wesson auto.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Speaking, I did pass FOC today, and I was going to ask them about stuff, but it looks like they're moving ahead with their building and everything. It looks like they're really just waiting for the city to say everything's good.
Do they have the second retail location open up yet?
No, that's what they're working on now, but apparently the range is, from the sound of things, and this is just hearsay, so don't quote me on this, people. Hopefully I won't get in trouble for hearing it. The range is pretty much done. They're just working on getting, light fixtures and that kind of stuff in the retail location. And they're waiting for the city to give them that rubber stamp of approval.
Yeah, they got behind schedule on that, because I was in there about a month ago. And they finally got the final paperwork in as the council exited for the summer. So now they're playing catch up.
Yeah.
Dear FOC, Benny said.
Yeah, that's going to hurt. later on. So that's what I heard. But it looks like they are moving their stuff. Like, normally the store is packed. And I was actually there on a Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And they had, like, three or four customers in there. That place is never empty.
No.
They also posted on Facebook that they were hiring. So I guess things are going to be progressing soon.
Yeah. That's something for our listeners to keep an ear out for. If you're interested and you need a job, send in
your resume. You applied for it too, didn't you?
I did send in an application.
You know what? So did I.
Didn't your wife say you're not allowed to work in a gun store, Thomas?
Actually, yeah, we were having that conversation about an hour ago too. I said, yeah, well, I mentioned that you, that Ben was interested in too. She goes, no, you're not working in the gun store. No, it's just because we won't make any money because we'll be spending all your money on stuff. So no, you're not working in the gun store. So I think,
but you won't be losing money though.
I won't be bringing home any money, which is the problem. I'd be like a little kid in a candy store. Oh my, look what Fred brought in today. Because they got some neat stuff in there.
Yeah, they do. They do some neat stuff. But Thomas, don't you already technically work for a gun company?
I do.
There you go. There's proof. There's proof right there. You know, you can handle working for a firearms company without emptying the bank, mostly.
This is true, because I do get an employee's discount if I want it.
Oh, my dad had a question about that. We never got our Christmas presents, Thomas. I'm kidding.
Well, you better speak to the rabbi about that then, because that has nothing to do with me.
My dad's like, oh, so wait, does that mean we're going to get grand powers and stuff? And I'm like, no, Dad. That's not how it works.
Dave actually did message us, and he said that they do. I can't have a family discount. So, like, you know, if somebody in my family wanted something, I could get them something at cost. But I only have one relative, my nephew, Mario, who's got his license, and that's it. Nobody else in my family shoots or hunts, so. Well, technically, I've got a half-sister, Patty, out in Alberta. And so I guess be my brother-in-law, Neil, did get his pal. But she said in no uncertain terms that there'll be no handguns in her house, so. And she's more stubborn than I am, so there's no point arguing with my sister Patty.
Do they have a detached garage?
You're stubborn?
It gets worse. Do I have a detached garage? No, the garage is in front of the house.
Do they have a detached garage?
I don't know. They just bought a new house. I don't know.
So that's good information that your brother should know, because if it's a detached house, then... a detached garage, I mean, then, you know, it's not technically in the house.
This is true. This is very true. Because there actually is no entrance from my garage to the house. So as long as there's no separate door, or if there is not a door, so it's not technically attached, I'll mention it to him.
Okay, good.
And watch how well that goes over. Good.
I don't know. Just... there's so many neat stuff. Like, I was at FOC last month, excuse me, and I've got one of those, I think the same trigger pull scale that Mike has, one of those midway cheap spring things, and they had a really nice digital scale. And I think it was almost $100. I think, boy, I could really use this. And then I see so many little knickknacks that I don't really need, but I'd really want. And, you know, if I'm getting a deal on it, I would rationalize myself into buying it, so...
Like, I was looking at their weapon mounted lights. They had the Teal Arrow 1 and Surefire. Teal Arrow 1, I think, was... I don't remember how much it was, but it was over $100. And the Surefire was, like, twice that. And I'm, like, looking at these, and for some reason, I really want to put a light on my Jericho. But then I'm thinking about it today. I don't have a holster for that. Like, what am I going to do with it then?
So I'm sure Robert King from our Rachel Tactical could help you with that. I think maybe. My thing is I would never leave work because, you know, I could technically, it is a range. And even though I'm working there, I could still bring my guns to work with me, lock them up. And then when I'm finished working for the day or whatever I was doing, I could go to the range and practice. And I'm getting ammunition at discounts. And, you know, I'd be spending a lot more time at work than I currently spend at work. So Would it be cool?
I don't understand why Terry didn't want you to take the job.
I would spend all my free time there. That's not a bad thing, you know.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I understand.
Well, somebody'd have to walk the dog and feed the wife, you know. Anyway,
that's what I did in guns this week. Mike, what did you do?
Just more dry firing, cleaning brass, and getting stuff ready for heading down to Pennsylvania. That's pretty much it. Anyways, let's move on to guns in the news. Thomas, why don't you take story number one?
Story number one, this is actually from By Knife Zone. I've edited it down a little bit. And actually, I think Brian posted this, something similar. But I'll just read you what By Knife said. Knives allowed in Canada, but not allowed to come into Canada. Canadian life laws on automatic knives are as follows. Section 84, Part 1 of the Criminal Code defines a prohibited weapon as a knife that has a blade that opens automatically by gravity or centrifuge force, by hand pressure applied to a button, spring, or other device that is attached to the knife. By this definition,
that was... knife.
The handle. Well, it just says attached. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Attached to the handle of the knife.
That makes a difference because if you're pressing, like most blades that have a protrusion on the blade itself, then it's not part of the handle. It's part of the blade.
That's true.
And just that's like, what's, that's
just
what
like my buck.
That's what makes a big difference when it comes to these knives that they're not prohibiting.
Well, they're not technically prohibited because by this definition, which was passed in 1969, and it has not changed, all assisted opening knives that are open via thumb stud or protrusion on the blade are legal in Canada. This is backed by the Canadian Border Services memo, D19-13-2. This act of memorandum is the only publication available to the public regarding the legalities of knives allowed in Canada. However, the CBCA seized all assisted opening knives due to rulings by the Canadian International Trade Tribunal. They banned the, it's a quasi-judicial tribunal that's supposed to follow the law, but logic and reason, reasonableness under the law. Unfortunately, the problem is that they're saying they're prohibited to import and, but they're not prohibited to own. So if you're going to appeal this to federal court, it's a question of how much money can you afford. It's just funny how these tribunals can ignore the law and it's going to take a lot of money to challenge this. And the funny thing is, the gentleman that was renting the cottage beside us for years, he actually works, I won't say his name, he works at the CBSA at the airport where a lot of the knives come in. And their position is if they can open it with one hand, it's prohibited. So it's funny because he can't open it. Like I've got a couple of knives. Any knives that come in, most of the, like 99% of the agents can't open them. They've got this one guy that's built like an ox. And what they do, they give the knife to him. And it may take them several attempts, but if he can open it, then they'll deem prohibited and they'll confiscate whatever's coming in. So this ruling is not a legal ruling. The knives are not prohibited. They're perfectly legal in Canada. It's Canadian Border Services that are saying, no, we can't bring them in the country under their own interpretation, because of the tribunal. So if you own one, don't take it out of the country because you're going to have a hard time taking it back in the country.
And I've heard that once the CBSA confiscates it as a prohibited device, whether it is or not in Canada, once they confiscate it, it officially has the label of prohibited on it, and there's pretty much no way that you can get it back. Even if you can prove that it's not prohibited, it doesn't matter. Once they put the label on it, it might as well be an AK-47. You're never going to get to touch it.
No, and a lot of times they won't even send it back. I'm assuming they just have it destroyed.
Yeah, probably.
And the problem, too, a lot of times is our law enforcement don't understand the definition of a knife. I've run across a few people over the years who've had their knives confiscated by the police, and they've actually taken it to court, and they've won every time. But... Yeah. You have to be careful. It's how the law enforcement interprets the acts themselves. So
I don't know when I went to sleep and woke up in a police state. because the more and more I listen to this, the more it sounds like, hey, the cops can make up any decision they want, and unless you have oogles of money that you're willing to use to hold your rights, you're guilty and you're going to go to prison for it, because it doesn't really make a difference. The cops make up the rules as they go along, and there's nothing you can say or do except for spend large quantities of money to make, you know, to show them that you're actually a law-abiding citizen.
And I think that's why they do it, because they know the average person just does not have the finances to challenge this. And this will get challenged in court. You want, like, somebody will get charged. It'll go to court. The person will probably win, because under the legal definition, like, you've got a Gerber knife, Benny, right? It's got a thumb stud on it.
Yep.
Now, can
that thing isn't opening, no matter how hard you flick it or whatever. But it is. You can open it with your thumb, and that is opening it with one hand. So, according to their new interpretation, pretty much everyone's gonna be walking around with fixed blades.
Well, not necessarily, because this is just for importation. This has nothing to do with the current laws.
Yeah.
Right. I'm saying if you're looking to carry a knife nowadays, no more pocket folders. You might as well just strap a nice big heavy Bowie knife to your forearm on the inside, so can't really see it. And away you go. You know, if you need to open a box, you just pull out this, you know, 12-inch knife and start hacking away, and that's completely legal. But you know, your 4-inch Gerber that has thumb studs on it, you know, that's gonna kill puppies and, you know, drown kittens. So
yeah, well, that doesn't affect your lockbacks. It's just like I've got a buck 110 or buck 112, where you physically you need two hands to open the knife, and then it locks.
Right.
They're aiming this more towards a knife that can open one hand, and in my opinion, that discriminates a lot of people. There's a lot of older people who do not have the strength to open a knife with two hands. There are people who have mobility issues. I know in some of the states, the actual auto knife law got changed because it got challenged by a disabled person, because they could not physically open the knife with two hands. They can only use one hand. And one of the states, the law got thrown out because it discriminated against somebody with a disability. So it's stupid. Just if you do buy, if you have a nice knife, like, you know, whether it's the Gerber or whatever, don't take it out of the country. If you're going on holidays, leave it at home.
Yeah.
I never take my good knife out of the country anyways, because like you said, you never know. A, you're a big difference too. You go somewhere like the States, every state has a different law, like their firearms law, and you don't know what state your knife might be legal in, what state it might not be. So,
yeah, because they've got blade restrictions in different states, and auto knives are legal in one state, and it's not in another state. Another state's got to be over 3 inches, another state's got to be under 3 inches, so you're better off just leave your nice knives at home.
And also, I think in some states, if you have your knife on you, unless it's like your kitchen knife, it's considered a concealed carry weapon, and you need a CCW permit to do that.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Well, same with pocket knives in Canada. If that's in your pocket, okay, they could actually charge you with a concealed weapon, which is one of the reasons that a lot of us have the clips, because that way it's not in your pocket. It's visible the whole time. But if you've got something buried in the bottom of your pocket and you've got a cop that, you know, wants to give you a bad day, it's more than reasonable for him to charge you with carrying a concealed weapon. But it's all based on intent, right?
No, it isn't. Remember, we covered this when we were talking about interesting looking gun cases. Certain things are considered a weapon, and that doesn't make a difference what you do or what your intention is. You're always considered to be a weapon.
Under the criminal code?
I would love to say knives are not included in that, but honestly, I don't know, and I'm not a legal.
The only thing that's considered a weapon under the criminal code is a firearm, and everything else is based on intent according to the criminal code. So if you've got a knife in plain view and you have a mobility issue or whatever, as long as you don't say that, oh yeah, I have it for self-defense, say no, I use it for work every day.
Which you, right. This is my stabbing knife.
Well, Benny, you use a knife at work all the time, don't you?
Yeah, I got to open boxes and whatnot.
Yeah, you got to open boxes. I've got a mobility issue with my left arm. I like to have a knife.
You sure do have issues, Thomas.
Yes, I do. Just wait till you get older, Mike.
I'm enjoying it while it lasts.
the positive about the states having different rules in different states is you have some states where you can have automatic knives, no issue. And you know you're gonna find that kittens and puppies aren't dying en masse in those states.
I know. Because if you do carry a knife, just remember that it never mention that its intent is to use it for self-defense. It's a tool, just a tool that you use every day. I use it to open the mail, I use it for this. But the minute that you say that it will protect myself, then you're carrying a weapon and
you are not allowed to do that in Canada.
No, you can't. But it's a tool. I use it every day for work, or I have a mobility issue. I don't have any strength. I need it to open envelopes and stuff. You're fine, but. Any other reason we'll could get you arrested.
Yep.
Now we've beaten that one to death. What's story number two?
Kingston police have charged a 25-year-old man with two counts of assault with a weapon, alleging he shot his girlfriend and her children with Q-tips fired from a BB gun. Really? I'm sorry I interrupted the middle of this, but really? Okay. Police say the accused was living with his girlfriend and her children in Kingston, Ontario last year, but after allegations of abuse involving the family members, the children went to live with relatives in Manitoba. Investigators allege the man used force, including a BB gun, to shoot Q-tips at his girlfriend and children last summer to take control of the family. It's alleged that in one of the incidents, he attempted to shoot his girlfriend in the face, and in another, a 9-year-old girl was shot with a Q-tip that punctured her skin. Kingston police said the accused surrendered on Wednesday and was charged with two counts of assault with a weapon. They said the investigation was aided by police in Brandon,
Manitoba.
Okay, fine. I'm sorry, I'm not 1,000% familiar with Canadian geography.
I'm surprised. Well, that's okay. I only know that because that's where my in-laws live.
Oh, Mike.
I'm surprised that's all they charged him with.
Don't you live near Kingston? Is this you, Mike?
I live far enough away that I would not be included in the Kingston circle. I am not in the greater kidding. Kingston area.
Have either of you ever shot Q-tips out of an air gun?
No. First I thought this was stupid, but according to the letter of the law, I believe this might actually be assault with a deadly... Well, I don't know about deadly weapon. Definitely deadly. Definitely with a weapon. Because BB guns or any firearm looking object, if used in a commission of a crime, is considered like a firearm.
Yeah.
So I think they can slap on possession of a firearm without a PAL.
Maybe pointing a firearm is legal. That's a charge right there. I can tell you for a fact, I have a Craftsman Mark 1 or Mark 2 22 caliber single shot CO2 air pistol, and it will put a Q-tip through a beer can, and it'll put a Q-tip through a cardboard box. I did try it when I was about 18 or 19. It doesn't go far, but at at 5 or 6 feet, it will penetrate a box.
So wait, that's when you take off the cotton then?
No, that's when the cotton batten on.
Oh, okay. Because so I'm just imagining that, someone just taking a Q-tip and shoving the cotton.
Well, that helps create the air seal.
Right.
And I was amazed because when it goes through the box, it just shreds the cotton right off, and you've just got a solid plastic projectile or paper projectile. So I can see it sticking in the kid. Like, if you shot somebody close range, you could impale them with it.
Yeah. So I must admit, first reading this article, I was like, seriously, he's shooting Q-tips, and I'm just imagining this Q-tip like going out of the barrel, bouncing off someone's shirt. You know, not a problematic situation, but apparently it is. Okay, so shows how much I know on this. But
that's the only reason I put it in, because I've actually done it through. Yeah, that's. I remember going through the cardboard boxes and the beer cans. I'm sure you could. You definitely, if it went through somebody's soft tissue like their eye, at close range, because it's thin and it's small, and with the cotton at the back, it creates an air seal and it travels. It loses trajectory really fast because it's so wonky. But at close ranges, it could do some damage.
So yeah, I can definitely see this being an issue, and it's not shedding any positive light on anyone, but it doesn't sound like this was something that required a PAL to begin with, so it'd be nice if they didn't, lump him in with the rest of us. Okay, so we don't have anything written down for new in the industry, but the thing is, have you guys not seen the new thing coming out of IWI?
No.
Oh, the shotgun?
Really? Yeah! like, I'm going to, like...
I thought that thing looked like the biggest, bulkiest, like, most cumbersome firearm ever made.
That's because it's got a rotating magazine underneath the barrel. It's got three magazines. I got to walk up to those guys and be like, dude, you got to make this pump. Otherwise, yeah. All six people who buy it in Canada won't be able to buy it. yeah, semi-auto shotgun with a capacity of 25 plus one, I believe. I don't really remember, but it's
25 plus one. That means you have to crack open a second box of shell just to fully load it.
Yeah, but think about this: you're like maybe if you're in Alberta, you'll have to reload during a three gun competition. Maybe. And at that point, you know, you might as well just stage a second shotgun.
Can you imagine how much it weighs with all that ammo? Like, I thought that, was it the KSG was heavy? Imagine how much that thing weighs?
Yeah, it's funny. They called it a bullpup. I guess that still is true. I don't know. I'm excited to go play with it at SHOT Show.
Oh, yeah, you're going to Media Day.
I'm not media.
Well, technically, you're co-host of New Shooter Canada. That's media.
Yeah, but I didn't get a media pass. I'm getting an industry pass.
You should have got... That's not damn.
No, it's okay. It's unless you're really writing reviews or anything, it's not... like it doesn't sound like it's worth it. You stand outside for, excuse me, like 6 hours to shoot, you know, a couple of guns, and most of the time people are like, you get like a quick couple shots and then you're ferried on to the next booth kind of thing. Like, yeah, it sounds awesome, but I don't think you can take your time with anything to actually get a feel for it.
No, there'd be just too many people there. And I remember Rakowski and Pat Harrison put a couple of videos up when Action Shooting Radio went down, and it was a tremendous amount of time lining up and waiting, and they didn't actually post a lot of guns because, like you said, it took so much time.
Yeah, so it sounds cool, and like the well-known channels that are probably being pushed to the front by manufacturers, which is, I don't have an issue with. You know, you're trying to get your product out there, and you know they're doing that. Good for them. But little old me isn't gonna get preferential treatment at an event like that. So, but yeah, cool shotgun coming out of IWI.
What was the retail price on it?
I want to say under $2,000, maybe 18. And I think that's coming out of IWI Israel. So, again, I could be wrong, though. I'd have to check.
And if you don't like it, you can always use it as a boat anchor.
If it's empty, I don't know if it will weigh that much.
Don't know how heavy it would be. Is it polymer, though, or is there a lot of steel in it as well because with a shotgun, aren't the pressure levels a lot higher than a rifle? Am I getting that right? Shotgun pressure levels are higher, so you need more metal insulation to handle the pressure?
I think the rifle pressure would be a lot higher.
I seem to remember hearing that was the big thing with the KSG, why it was so big and heavy, was because they had to put extra metal at the back where the chamber was.
So,
most shotguns have a... it could be, you know, because most shotguns have a pretty thick chamber. It just sort of tapers after that.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm just looking at pictures now. Barrel's 18.5, and it looks like it loads back there. So yeah, you're still getting most of your weight is actually like by your hand, like the chamber and everything, like all the bulky parts. Your mechanism for rotating the magazines and everything is all over the trigger.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you'll get to see it at SHOT Show. Do you have a recorder?
No, you're not allowed to take pictures or anything like that. Unless you get explicit permission from SHOT Show.
Yeah. I'm just thinking for interviews and stuff. But yeah, you have to have a media thing for that too.
Yeah. But listed here on TV Press Pass, which has been taken over by Wally F. It's listing it at $13.99 US. So, that is cheaper than, I believe the Tavor's, regular Tavor was going for $19.99.
Yeah, it's going to say somewhere right around that $2,000 mark.
So this is going to be less than that. So.
And it's going to be plugged to 5 shots.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Hopefully it'll be plugged to...
Hence why Benny wants a pump version.
Yeah, I want a pump version, but like even if it gets plugged to... what's it called? To 5 per... And I doubt it will. From what I understood, people have tried to bring in similar concepts, and they've been blocked. So... But hopefully they'll bring it in either with... even if they bring it in with one magazine tube. I guess they'll have to drop the price, but it's still pretty cool. Yeah, the Tavor in the States MSRP is $19.99. It's basically $2,000. So this looks like it's going to be a higher-end shotgun. IWI fanboys will probably pony up the cash to get it.
All six of you?
Well, I feel like there's a little bit more than six of us here. I must say, the most common comment or agreed statement on the post of the article was make it pump or make it, you know, you make it something besides semi, because in Canada we're it's probably gonna get prohibited.
That's a sad thing about looking at stuff like that. You just look at it, you start to drool, and you go, oh crap.
Yeah.
It's like that Christmas present you're never gonna get, right?
Yeah. Although I did manage to actually buy a Tavor, so like the idea of me buying another gun that's $2,000 isn't so foreign. It's just gonna take a lot longer.
How's your AR build coming along?
It's stuck at without an upper.
Stuck with.
Yeah, I need. I don't know when I'm gonna do that. I'm probably gonna do it with Maple Ridge Armory parts. But I don't know. We'll see where I'm at in a couple months, where things are going.
I just saw a picture. Was it Trevor ordered? Got a really nice upper from them.
Yeah, not upper. He ordered everything.
The barrel?
Barrel, handguard, anything to finish his non-restricted Maccabee build.
It looked really nice, like the barrel and the handguard. It looked super cool.
Yeah, a guy just posted, I think he got it done at Red Deer, was it RDSC?
Yeah, Red Deer Rifle Club.
Yeah, he got one of the Maple Ridge barrels Cerakoted, but it's the fluted, like they're all fluted, so the straight flutes, but the raised parts weren't Cerakoted. It's done in red, so you have like, it's really, really cool. You should check it out.
Yeah, I saw it. It looks awesome.
Yeah, it is really cool.
I'm not sure how Cerakote would hold up on an AR barrel. Those things get awfully hot. I figured it would cook the Cerakote off.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with that. But it looks really cool.
I can see it in, say, a 22, because I know Stacy, her barrel's fluted under 10/22, and my Smith & Wesson 22 barrel, the flutes are Cerakoted, but oh man, I've had where I thought my barrel was going to break out in flames because the oil was smoking off my AR so many times. We'll see how it holds up.
Yeah, no, he posted the old one and it looked fine. So like he had an old barrel that he's replacing with the new one and it was Cerakoted. So I guess it was fine.
Oh, good. I'd be, that's something I'd be worried about myself, but
yeah.
It depends. Like if you do a nickel boron, that would be different. But an actual paint application, I'd just be curious how it would survive the heat, the heating and cooling.
Mike, what's the main topic?
Main topic. So this is kind of part one to long range shooting. So we're going to talk about wind. So this is pretty much taken right from CR64 Riflecraft Facebook page.
With permission,
yes.
With permission.
Talking about when? So, you know, you can't always get to the range. So wind is a great thing that you can practice off of the range. So part of your practice should be to essentially observe the wind and kind of learn how the wind blows. So you'll need to get yourself a wind meter. So even a cheap one that you can find on Amazon will do just fine. Go into your backyard, parking lot, park, wherever there's, you know, a decent opening so you can see the wind blow around and see what it does to trees, grass, and things like that. And you should watch what the wind's doing. Notice the patterns of the cycles of gusts and lulls. Note the change in direction and speed. If you have flags, you should watch those and any natural indicators, so things like the grass and trees, leaves, things like that, and make notes. So really what you're doing is you're practicing reading the wind so that when you get out there on game day or, you know, live fire day, you're not wasting time trying to learn a new skill that you could have already learned. So it's almost like the equivalent of doing dry fire. You're trying to teach yourself a skill before you actually go live with it so that you don't have to waste, you know, your valuable range time and range ammo just trying to learn something that you could have done at home.
Wow.
But
I could not sit and like, I need someone to teach this to me.
I do too. So reading wind while shooting starts well before the shot. So even the night before, look up weather forecast for the day and location and read through your shooting data book for similar conditions, operational sniper study met reps. As we arrive at the location, get out of the vehicle at the range, estimate wind from natural indicators, then check against your wind meter. So good, I guess, like warm up. We tune into the wind as we approach our shooting position, as the hunter approaches their blind, as the sniper moves into the final position. While we wait for our turn in competition, notice speed, direction, pattern, where you are. Gust and ebb, cycles and pattern. Wind can be steady, but often forms cyclic pattern in their velocity. So what that means is, essentially, it's never a constant wind. There's always going to be either a lull in the velocity, the speed of it, or they'll have a change in direction. So, you know, the wind blowing left to right for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden it changes for a minute, then it goes back. Or it can even have both, so a change in velocity and in direction. So observe the patterns of the winds by watching shifting wind flags, natural indicators, and the mirage. So now you have to learn how to shoot through the wind. So scope settings may be selected for higher winds or chosen for lulls of the wind, whichever is favorable. Competition operational conditions may require shooting in less than favorable winds. One method is to set a scope for favorable conditions, but know a hold for lulls, gust, or condition changes. So essentially, you're teaching yourself how to, or where to hold, sorry, when the wind is blowing. You can dial in your rifle, but unless you get to sit there all day long and take your shot, then it's not going to do you much good, right? If the deer walks in front of you and the gust of wind blows, well, that's when you have to take your shot. So you need to be confident in knowing where you have to put the crosshair to get a good shot. So wind and environmental conditions must be recorded every time we fire to develop quality data for further shoots. Your data book is your most valuable tool. Like dry firing, practice wind calling off the range. Every time you get out of your vehicle, judge wind against a meter if you can. Using a spotting scope and a wind meter, observe the wind immediately around you and record your observations below. So draw wind directions and levels, and there's an image there. We'll drop the image into the show notes.
Well, I was speaking to Ben, and we're going to have Ben from CR64 Riflecraft on the show next week. We couldn't really schedule anything this week, actually recording a couple of days early because Mike's going to a match down in Pennsylvania, and Benny's going to SHOT Show, and I'm sure I think Ben's going down there too. So we'll have him on either next week or the week after, and we'll have Ben, we'll do a part two of this and have Ben actually describe his format and his classroom and his teaching methods. And so we can work, learn a little bit more about shooting in the wind.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be a good exercise. Go ahead.
Go for it, Mike.
I was going to say, well, I think this is really good to read over and take a look at so that next week when Ben does come on and we talk to him about this, we'll have a much better idea of what he's talking about, and hopefully we'll have more further questions for him.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I kind of picked this up because Matt, Matt from Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns and I were talking about how far we actually shoot with our 10-22s. And he's done like 200-yard shots with his 10-22. So that's, you know, you've got a projectile that's dropping really quickly and that small lightweight that'll be really affected by the wind. So that got me thinking. And then I saw Ben's post. So then I contacted him. He had a meeting tonight, so we couldn't do it tonight. So hopefully we can get into a lot more detail next week with Ben.
Yeah, this is one skill that I would like to master. Being able to hit that deer at 1,300 yards is something that, or 200, two, sorry, yeah.
That's a long shot.
2 kilometers to hit that deer, to be able to say I can do that, something I would like to say I could do.
Well, this is all the stuff that the CQB and the service rifle guys do, because they have extremely long shots, and you know, and they have to know the wind and their course of fire.
Yeah, they say under 200 yards and you don't, or meters, you don't really have to account for wind so much, at least if you're shooting 223 or 556. So that's something that was touched upon when I did some long distance shooting in the past, but we didn't actually get to practice it because we were shooting at the furthest was 200 yards, plus we were at a range, so it takes away a lot of the wind when you have berms on either side.
It would. I have in the past, Modern Rifleman Radios had been on, and it was an excellent show. So hopefully we can expand on some more information for our listeners, especially if you want to start long range competitions, because learning the wind is something that you really need to know. Either for long-range hunting or for long-range rifle competition.
Yep.
Man, we have a lot of dead space today.
Well, yeah. Event number one.
I didn't put it in, but the CSSA are having a rod and reel contest. So if you go to their Facebook, go to their website, you can get a link. $20 gets you one ticket. I think $50 get you 3, $100 get you 10, and it's a really nice fishing rod and reel package. Yeah. I don't know why they didn't put a gun in this time, but we all like to fish too. Okay, well, maybe all of us.
Yeah, I'm with Benny on this one. I like drinking in a boat.
I used to fish a lot, and like the last, I don't think last year I even renewed my fishing license.
Well, don't you have one of those awesome stickers on your car that make you not have to buy one?
You mean the disabilities? No, I don't have a disability. Terry has one. I can't use it.
I thought you didn't need a license to fish once you're a senior.
At 65, Mike.
I thought you were like 105.
Do you want to edit? Because I have some choice words I could use. In the province of Ontario, if you're over 65 years of age, which I'm not, or if you have a disabled parking permit and you have a permanent disability, you do not need a fishing license. I just haven't felt like fishing. I used to rent a boat every week, or every week we went up to the cottage. I'd always be fishing with my buddy Dave. But about 5 or 6 years ago, I just like, okay, I've done this thousands and thousands of times, and I just don't feel like doing it anymore.
Yeah. All right, Benny, why don't you take event number two?
Event number two, Canadian Wild Turkey Federation annual, I don't know what AMA stands for, Longbeard's first annual Hunting Heritage Banquet will be held on Saturday, February 10th, 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. Doors open at 5 p.m., dinner at 6 p.m. The address is 468 Lowe's Side Road, Amherstburg, Ontario, And then they have the postal code for some reason. Tickets are singles. Yeah. Tickets are single, $65. Couple, $95. Youth, $35. Single sponsor, $280. Couple sponsor, $300. Gold sponsor table, $1,200. Contact Brian at 519-736-2221 or www.amasportsmen.com for more information. Links are in the show notes.
Okay.
I think I'm getting that announcer voice down really well.
It's getting better.
Yeah, if Thomas wouldn't cut you off, then he'd be great.
Yeah. Right,
event number three is the Toronto Sportsman Show, March 14th to 18th. The International Center in Mississauga. Tickets are available. Yeah, if you're a hunter, it's great. If you're not a hunter, I guess if you're like Thomas and you like to fish, then it's great too, but yeah.
Oh, it's not even that. There was so much fishing there last time. There was like one small section of shooting, and that was it.
Yeah.
And then all of it was babuzumi and boats and boats and boats. It's like
they do have a lot of booths for hunting lodges though.
Yeah, hunting and fishing, shooting not a lot. Ipswich had a booth a couple years ago because when Kelly and George and I went, because Chris Wachowski and Pat Harrison were at the Ipswich booth. CCFR will have a table. The CCSA will probably have a table. There was a few small gun retailers, but it's not like it used to be. You used to be able to go to the sportsman show and buy guns and get great deals, and it's more of a display.
Yeah.
Nowadays, but
okay. Canadian Sportswomen Society, in association with the Canadian Wild Turkey Federation, Women Like Us, and Bushnell Trigger Effect TV presents the second annual Ladies Intro to Turkey Hunting, April 7th, 2018, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at East Elgin Sports Association in Almer, Ontario. Cost is $75 per person, non-refundable. Includes ammo, lunch, refreshments, insurance, use of shotguns and bows, gift bags, hands-on learning, and so much more. For more information, please contact Lorianne Horst at 226-923-0193. Links are in the show notes.
And event five is the CCFR Gun and Girl calendar is now on sale for $15.99. This year's calendar highlights and promotes some of our amazing CCFR women with beautiful, tasteful, and stunning photos of them and their favorite firearms. The fundraise for these projects used to financially support the women's program. And each calendar also comes with a registration certificate on the back for the giveaways, limited to quantity. So if you buy a poster, if you buy a calendar, if you go in the back, there's a registration number and there's a link. Go online, register it. And they already gave away the first prize pack. Dean from the Shooting Supplies donated a range bag, hearing protection, and safety glasses as the first prize. So,
yeah, I ordered one of those yesterday, I think. So it should be. I got the notice that they got sent out today. So
that's good.
I got in trouble for having the calendar the other day. I'd written something on it. So I keep it in my room, and I pulled it out and I brought it out. And Terry's like, "What's that?" I said, "Oh, it's just the Gunny Girl calendar." "What do you mean the Gunny Girl calendar?" I said, "Well, there's a contest. I'm just making sure that I register for the contest." And of course, she looked through it, goes, "You had girls sign these." I said, "Well, yeah, because I did a sales call at Greater Napanee Gun Works. And then
had to do.
And then I had to go to SFRC because I had to renew my CCFR membership because I let it lapsed. And since I was, you know, in the area and, you know, Tracy's a friend of mine, I'd go see Tracy and just renew my membership and just happened to buy a calendar. And there just happened to be some lovely, lovely ladies there that signed the calendar for me. And I got to ride in the armored personnel carrier.
There's a lot of coincidences there.
She wasn't impressed. She's looking at the signatures. "Who's this?" I said, "Well, that's Ryan's wife, Marcy." "Oh, what do you mean? How do you know Marcy?" I said, "Well, I don't know her personally. I just know her to say hi." And yeah, it didn't go well.
"I don't know her. She was just at the store. And I'm like, hey, you're on the calendar. Can you sign it for me?" And she's like, "Yeah, sure."
They had a lot of very lovely ladies there that signed the calendars. I got Marcy, I believe, signed mine. And Angela signed mine. And another two other girls I didn't know, but they signed it anyway. And Summer signed mine.
Nice.
So mine's a collector's item. But apparently Trevor's got a lot more signatures than mine did. I think he had Yolanda personally sign his again.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, well, since somebody spilled water or supposedly spilled water on his calendar, so he had to get it redone.
Yeah.
But they're all very tasteful pictures. There's a couple that are very nice, but most of them very tastefully done.
Yeah. Nice hesitation. All right. Listener email. So this was actually a response on the Facebook page. So they said, I forgot to write down who sent this in. I'm sorry. Listened to the show yesterday. Unfortunately, the reality in Canada is that if you want a 10-round pistol magazine for competition, you unfortunately have to pay double for it, one for the magazine and one for the extension. The problem I found with a mag wedge is not only are you dropping the magazine on the feed lips, but unless you are wearing gloves, you tend to cut your hand up on the corner of the metal feed lips when pushing the magazine into the magwell. Which, yeah, I didn't consider. That's a very good point.
I think it was Brandon, wasn't it, that wrote that in? I'm looking it up now.
Well, so am I, so see who can do it faster.
And I'm just going to comment, respond to the comment. I did respond.
Brent, it was Brent. Brent Hudson.
Don't oust him.
Not oust him. It was a good comment.
Yeah, I thought it was
especially
good.
Especially when if you're cutting your fingers open on the products.
That's important information.
My response to that was... I missed that he meant on the feed lips when I read it. So I said, well, that's why I use the Caldwell ones, because that's like a seamless connection of the two magazines. Although Caldwell does make caps for theirs. Like, it comes with a cap. So if you want to cap the first one, shove it into your firearm like that, and then wait for your bolt to get locked back and then insert it.
That seems like a waste of... time, though, if you're doing this for competition, to like take your little rubber cap off the bottom one, take your magazine out, flip it around, put the little rubber cap on the bottom, then put the magazine into the gun.
You only put the rubber cap the first time. But personally, I don't do that. I when I insert my magazine, I do it properly the first time and don't smash the bottom of the mag. I don't know. That's just probably me being pretentious, but
jeez,
I run
Benny.
It in competition. Yeah, I have three 10-round magazines, so I run two in the Caldwell mag couplers, and then I run three 5-rounders, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what I just also thought of? What if you use your magazine at a monopod?
Well, then you definitely would want to use the caps, and then they hold on pretty well, but all you probably have to do, and I wouldn't know, because I never use them, is just probably sweep your hand down along the magazine to get rid of the cap, and then flip it around and put it in. You're not adding that much more, and you're probably still saving time going down to your belt and then back up again.
We'll
see.
But
again, this is my nose in the air response, being a pretentious upper class person who knows better than the plebes. Yeah,
upper class. I've been to your home.
Ouch. Yeah, no. This is all that was all sarcastic.
I know. I'm just teasing Benny.
He's got a point. It's a valid point, and I haven't been in a situation where I did that yet. And honestly, the only time I really ran that in a competition, I was wearing gloves because it was freaking cold. So, yeah, I may or may not have done it and not noticed. But generally
when's the next three-gun competition?
The day I get back, actually, from Vegas. So the 28th of January. Also, we forgot to mention that the 8th annual, I think it's the 8th annual Canadian Podcaster Charity Shoot is set for, I think it's June or is it July? Whatever. It's a three-day event now.
July. It's July. It's shoot? The 5th, 6th, and 7th. The 5th is the Ferlacci course. The 6th is a maple seed, and the 7th is the actual charity shoot.
Oh, if I can get time off work. Woohoo! Wife already said yes, so.
Yeah.
As long as everything else lines up, I'm going to New Brunswick.
Well, you don't have to worry about the charity, the maple seed, because you already got your patch. So you can just go for the Friday, hang out, hang around, do nothing on Saturday, and then go back to the charity shoot on Sunday.
No. Charity shoots on the is on Saturday. The Ferlacci course is on Thursday.
Oh, that
Naples
sucks.
Naples shoots on Friday. It's okay, Thomas. I need to get, you know, my patch is getting a little worn. I need to get a replacement or a backup one. So I can do that.
What you put it on your butt for then?
What?
Well, how would your patch get worn?
It's because I wear it on my shirt every day.
Because he rubbed it for good luck every day.
It's the best form of advertising, okay? You know how many people walk in the store and be like, oh, Rifleman, what does that mean? So I'm waiting for for Slamfire to do an episode on seven stepping someone properly so I can take notes this time, because I get that question at least once a week, if not twice, so.
Yeah, when I wear my my patches on my jean jacket, so I do get questioned a lot in the warmer weather when I wear my jean jacket.
Yeah, so I have a bunch of polos that I didn't like the original insignia on them, so I had someone stitch Velcro on either side, and I just slap a patch on when I go out. So.
Oh yes, those are the yes, I remember those polos. I won't mention the insignia.
Yeah, so I've got that. Yeah, they're really nice polos. So, yeah. Okay. Anything else? Anyone?
Nope. So if you have any feedback, questions, or comments, you can send them to us at host@newsshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in the comment section on our website at newsshootercanada.ca.
So I guess we should put the charity shoot information in the show notes for next week, since...
that would probably be a smart thing to do.
Yeah, okay.
Or
we could do the New Shooter Canada thing.
I'll send a message to Slamfire and be all like, yo guys, we've been like waiting for you to put out a info thing about this, so we're not going to mention it again until you guys tell us what to put
out. We need a poster, we need an event calendar so we can advertise it properly, right?
Exactly.
I haven't been listening much since Matthew's been gone. Like, without Matthew, it's just no fun. Brian's okay, but Matthew makes the show.
They have to do an episode with him on coffee. Maybe bring back Owen, just as like a, you know, when Matthew comes back, have an Owen and Matthew show with Matthew on caffeine. That was my favorite episode ever. So
yeah,
let's see if they can do it again.
Okay, so no new iTunes or Stitcher reviews. Facebook likes.
1307.
Thank you, because no one wrote it in the show notes. All right.
You can tell we're prepared tonight, right?
Pardon me?
You can tell we're prepared like usual tonight.
Oh, yeah. Shout-outs, Thomas.
Shout-out Aaron Strickland. He was a listener who I talked out of getting a polymer lower and getting a nice AR lower from SFRC, Farms Outlet Canada. And he bought a Star B beat up 1911 type looking gun from Wolverine, but he got it at a really cheap price.
Yeah,
it's not in bad. He said it was pretty rusty, but he was having a problem. And they told him when he bought it that it's not always firing. So they were honest when they sold him. Look, you know, it has issues. It needs some work. And we're going back and forth at the pictures and stuff, and we've noticed that the safety is popping out a little bit, which is what's interfering with the sear. So luckily, I actually went on Marstar and I found out they actually have the parts in stock. So he's ordered some parts from Marstar, and hopefully he can get his first 9mm handgun going.
Awesome.
Benny?
Shout out. My wife. For as usual, taking care of me, dealing with me, putting up with me, making my life run smoothly. You know, the usual.
So did she get a Christmas present?
She did not get a Christmas present. But her birthday's in July, so she's gone out 6 months ago before.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's kind of far away.
Yeah, I guess shout out to Gavin for being an awesome travel partner. We haven't gone anywhere yet, but I'm really really getting excited for this. So we'll see where this goes.
He's already checking out food accommodations for you. He's posted a couple of nice restaurants and.
Yeah, we'll see. I gotta check their menu, their prices first before we go in there.
Well, I remember the one place. It looked reasonable. Then they had up top on it. It had the deluxe starting at $50.
Yeah, there's some pretty nice, jacket and tie type restaurants.
Yeah.
So, Mike, shout out?
Nope.
So, Mike, when are you leaving to Pennsylvania?
Saturday morning.
Okay.
Yep. Going down for the traditional Cabela's trip down the U.S. And then after that, we'll go back to where we're staying near Scranton.
I hear they're doing, there's a nice paper company over there.
I never watched the show.
They're rebooting it. Okay.
Are you serious?
I don't know if they're rebooting it or they're bringing it back on. I don't know. So for all of your listeners who watch The Office, it might be coming back. Because that's firearms relevant, right?
Yeah, very, very relevant.
All right, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Don't worry, Thomas, you're not missing anything. Take the sun out of here.
Okay, until next week, keep your barrels downrange and smoking. Take your kids shooting.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
Not about the odds, about the stakes. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
I really like 22 Mag.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.